Good afternoon and welcome to For the Cause of Christ, the radio ministry of the North Coast Baptist Church of Lakewood. The church is under the direction of its pastor, John Lutz. Stay tuned for a message straight and direct from the Word of God. Here now with this week's message is Pastor John Lutz.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to our broadcast today. We're so thankful that you are with us, and we have a very special broadcast that we're going to be doing today. I'm joined in studio with my dear friend, Pastor Al Davis from the Richfield Bible Baptist Church. And so we're thankful that, Pastor Al, that you're with us today. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thanks, Brother John. Glad you allowed me to come in here and join with you here this afternoon.
So. Yeah, you didn't even have to pay us this time, so that was good. So.
No, and you didn't have to pay me either.
So anyway, it is always a joy to be with each and every one of you. We're thankful that you've tuned in today. We've got a special broadcast. Pastor Al, you called me this week about something that was brought to your attention that, to be honest, is pretty troubling as far as where it's coming from and what the focus is, and we'll get into it just a little bit, but it has to do with the death penalty. And so we're going to be talking a little bit about the death penalty, really from the scriptural point of view, but then also what's really going on in our state here. And there's some real concerning things, aren't there, Pastor Al?
Absolutely, and that's why I was so glad that you were willing to allow me to be on with you. And of course, you're going to be on with me at 1:30 for our program. So I encourage our listeners here to stay tuned, because at 1:30 we'll be on live with Pastor Al, and you'll be joining me there. We're going to continue the discussion about the death penalty in the Bible.
Yeah, and it is, I guess in the environment we live in, unfortunately, we were talking earlier about the lawlessness, the overreaching lawlessness that goes on in our land. And when it comes to the death penalty, it is one of the most controversial for many years now. But it really comes down to me, when you look at the scriptures and you always start from the point of God, start right from the point of truth. What does God say, and why is man trying to deviate from what God said? And, I know there's a lot in the Old Testament we're going to look at, and rightfully so. And I like one preacher said this, sometimes people look at the Old Testament, that was the Old Testament. Listen, if God was for it in the Old Testament, he's for it in the New Testament. If God was against it in the Old Testament, he's against it in the New Testament. We have to remember that. And so I think one of the things we have to look at when we begin this argument is, what is the function and one of the main functions of human government as it's been instituted? And I think in Romans chapter 13, and even a little bit in Romans 12, but we'll go into the Romans 13, just to kind of set a premise, Pastor Al, and then maybe we'll look at some of the Old Testament passages. But Romans 13 says, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God, for they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. And I think that's an important phrase there, mm-hmm. Beareth not the sword. I mean, the sword, what's he using it? Just to bump you? Just to nudge you? Yeah, chop an ear off? A revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. And we'll just stop there for those verses. I think Paul lays out just a clear reminder that, one, it's a very limited government function, but a very important government function in the preservation of a society. And one of the main goals, or one of the main instructions that a government has the responsibility to do, is to punish those who are living contrary to the truth, and reward those who are doing the right things, who are doing good mm-hmm. things. And so we really have that backwards today, don't we? I mean, when you really look at the backwardness of our society, for many years now, we've been more focused on rewarding the evil and punishing the good versus doing what government really has been established and all governments are supposed to do. And so when you start from that premise that a main responsibility of the government is to preserve the society, as I see you're holding. Go ahead, read it for us, brother. I mean, specifically in our country.
Yeah, you were talking about governments, and we see that in the Declaration of Independence in our country, the founding document for our country, where it says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And then it says this, that to secure... It didn't say give or grant.
That's right, yeah.
It said secure, which means to ensure that they're not taken from us. They're called unalienable because they belong to us. They don't come from the government. They come from our Creator. They recognize that. That to secure these rights, he says it right here, governments are instituted among men.
Yeah.
That's the purpose.
Well, and absolutely. And, you know, some will read in, and this is kind of where we're getting into what's really going on in our state here. Some would look at that and they would say, well, see, even those people who took somebody else's life are entitled to their own life. And the Constitution guarantees them that right to their own life. But this is where we have a little bit of a conflict because, you know, God has clearly established a rule, a governing rule for man, and it has to do with the spilling of blood.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe now would be a good time. Let's go over to Genesis chapter number 9, and we'll look at this establishment of this rule. And I thought you had a great take on this. I don't know if you want to go over that or not, about with Cain. They were talking about at lunch. Let's go ahead and read it, and then we'll talk about it. So we have here in chapter 9, verse number 1, and God blessed Noah and his sons and said unto them, be fruitful, multiply, and replenish the earth. And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth and upon every fowl of the air and upon all that moveth upon the earth and upon all the fishes of the sea into your hand are they delivered. Every moving thing that liveth shall be meat for you, even as the green herb have I given you all things. But flesh... with the life thereof, which is the blood thereof. So that life is the blood, which we know is also repeated, I think, in Exodus or in Deuteronomy, somewhere in maybe Leviticus. I'm throwing them all out there. I might as well throw numbers in there too. It's in one of them. But the blood, life is in the blood. It says, shall ye not eat? And surely your blood of your lives will I require. At the hand of every beast will I require it. And at the hand of man, at the hand of every man's brother, will I require the life of man. Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man. So we see here the institution of this this governing principle. But, you know, was this the principle before the flood?
And that's a very good question because we were talking about this and I was looking at this and usually a lot of times when we talk about the death penalty in the Bible, generally people do start here in Genesis chapter 9.
Yeah.
And it's a very clear commandment that God gave that if somebody murders somebody, that their blood is to be shed, their life is forfeit, and he gave the reasons there. But actually when you go further back into Genesis chapter 4, we have the case where Cain kills his brother Abel.
Yeah.
Now, some people have tried to argue, well, it was accidental, he got caught up with emotion. I think the rest of the scripture, and for time's sake, without getting into everything, I think the rest of the scripture is pretty definite that he purposely killed his brother.
Absolutely.
He was jealous of him. God welcomed Abel's sacrifice. Abel gave the right sacrifice. Cain did not. God did not accept Abel's sacrifice. And so out of jealousy and anger, he purposely killed his brother Abel.
Yeah.
And that's murder. And so God says there in Genesis chapter 4, what hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground. And so there is a cause, a vengeance that needs to take place. But we find that when God tells Cain that he's going to be cursed to be a fugitive and a vagabond in the earth, Cain, it's interesting, he doesn't execute Cain.
Yeah.
He doesn't call for somebody to execute Cain here in this first murder recorded in the Bible.
Yeah.
But the idea of retribution appears to be there because Cain objected in verses 13 and 14, my punishment is greater than I can bear. Yeah. Behold, thou hast driven me out this day from the face of the earth, and from thy face shall I be hid, and I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond in the earth. And then he says, it shall come to pass that everyone that findeth me shall slay me. He understood that people would want to seek revenge, retribution, by taking his life for killing Abel. Yeah. And then it says that God set a mark upon Cain, lest any finding him should kill him. He also said that vengeance upon anybody kills Cain would be sevenfold.
Right.
But the idea is God did not want Cain dead. Why? And so we were talking about this, the idea that as Cain wandered the earth, whatever the mark is, I don't know what the mark is. People have come up with all kinds of things, a horn growing out of the middle of his forehead. Maybe he threw a third ear or something. I don't know. He had something that somebody said that he was marked with, like a letter from the Hebrew alphabet that would have referenced some of God's holiness or something. But whoever it was, it kept people, and plus the population of the earth was rather low at this time. We're sometime after the Garden of Eden. People have been born, and children have grown up and had more kids, and there could have been a few thousand people, maybe 10,000 people or more on the earth at the time. And so word would have gotten around, and Cain would have served as a visible reminder that you're not to murder somebody.
Yeah.
And so as he wandered the earth as a vagabond and it had this mark, people would see this, that God is not pleased with what he did, and this is a warning, don't you do the same thing. But unfortunately, it didn't work so well, did it?
No. No, it didn't. And just as you're saying that, I'm thinking, you know, he understood that this punishment that was being exacted was something of great intensity to him.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, again, that it was going to mark him to a point where when everybody saw him, you know, they're going to kill him because they know it's him.
Right.
And he was looking at it from the point of, you know, how it was going to affect him. God was looking at it. If this is true, then it was for the benefit of everybody else, not for Cain, but for the benefit of everybody else, right? For the preservation.
Well, he said, my punishment is greater than I can bear.
Yeah.
But God wanted him out there as this living testament as to his displeasure with murder.
So then why would Noah, or why after Noah, after the flood, do we have this establishment then of this mandatory, you know, revenge or retribution?
Well, I think two things come to mind. We see just a little bit further on in chapter 4 there, you find one of Cain's descendants, Lamech, kills somebody.
Right.
And he says to his wives that he doesn't have to worry about retribution because look at Cain.
Yeah.
And instead of being a deterrence to murder, Lamech appears to have used it as a justification. I don't have anything to worry about. Nobody's going to come after me. Look at Cain. And so the deterrence factor was now gone. And by the time you get to chapter 6, that's when God says in verse 5 that he saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. No doubt murders were taking place commonly by that time.
Which shows you, again, I think, okay, there's a big advocate about the death penalty versus life with parole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we would agree.
Or life in prison.
Or life in prison, without the possibility of parole, which is not a deterrent for anybody.
No more than Cain wandering the earth was a deterrent.
Yeah, exactly. And so and we agree that to us, it looks like Lamech is actually bragging about this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, okay, well, what are they going to do to me?
Right.
Okay, put a mark on me. I'll walk around the earth too. You know, so there's clearly, you know, something that God said, we're not going down this road again,
or maybe this way, God used this to show to us that putting somebody up as an example like this really isn't a deterrent at all, which we could extrapolate that to life without the possibility of parole really isn't a deterrent at all.
Sure. Especially in the condition where, you know, and we view it through the lens of our judicial system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not saying prison's easy. I think we've all been, you know, in ministry, we've gone into prisons and, you know, not something pleasurable. I remember the first time over in Grafton when I went back and got to see somebody in the hole, you know, mm-hmm. in solitary confinement, man, that is not a pleasurable place, you know, that anyone would want to be. So, you know, I'm not saying that that's, but in comparison to, you know, losing a life, you know, some argue, well, they really lost their life. But they haven't lost their life. They're just being tasked with a punishment mm-hmm. that is just, okay, well, we're going to put you in a cell for the rest of your life. But the problem with that is what? God said there's a requirement for blood that is shed, mm-hmm. that there is a requirement of blood to be repaid.
And remember, God said to Cain that Abel's blood cried out from the ground.
Yeah. You know, and you were saying earlier, I was looking this up while you were talking, where is it at here? When we're talking about Cain, whether he presumptuously did this, I don't know why this thing's not working.
Yeah, because some people had tried to say that it was an accident, fit of emotion or something like that.
Yeah.
He maybe didn't mean to, but.
I don't know what happened to it, but it was on my thing here. But what it said was Cain, who was of that wicked one, slew his brother because his works were evil and his brother's righteous. Mm-hmm. So it says because there was a direct presumption and premeditation mm-hmm. to say, hey, brother, let's go out to the field. Let's go talk a little bit.
Right.
So clearly, you know, even the Bible shows us that it was completely premeditated, you know, as far as that murder goes.
And so we see before the flood with Cain and then the case of Lamech and then the fact that wickedness increased more and more, there really was no deterrence for essentially setting somebody apart from society for life without parole and saying, this is what happens to you if you murder somebody.
Yeah.
It proved to be no deterrent, which in fact is one of the arguments that the people who were against the death penalty, they try to say, well, you should abolish the death penalty because it doesn't have the deterrent effect. And we'll talk about this more later on, I'm sure. But what they're advocating doesn't have a deterrent effect either.
Oh, absolutely.
God showed it with Cain.
Yeah. And again, and you know, we've probably got about 5 or 6 minutes left on this one. So I want to shift a little bit so we can let our people know, you know, if they can't stick around for the next half hour, you know, why we're talking about this. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a real movement in Ohio to abolish the death penalty. Now, it's nothing new. They've been at this for some time. One of the organizations has been over 25 years at this, trying to eradicate the death penalty. And, you know, is the death penalty working? Is it functioning the way that it was designed? Or are we interpreting it as non-effective because it's not being done properly? But there's some real movement. But Pastor Al, this is what you brought up. This is the difficult part. Who is it that's actually advocating for the abolishment of the death penalty?
Well, absolutely, and we're going to get into that probably in more detail at 1:30 in our program when we continue this discussion. But I believe that there's an effort from some left-wing progressive groups that are trying to infiltrate into the conservative movement, into conservative churches. We know the left-leaning churches have already abandoned death penalty along with most biblical doctrine a long time ago.
Yeah.
We understand the Catholic Church. Their position is against capital punishment.
Yeah.
The United Methodists, they're against the United Church of Christ. They're against it.
Yeah.
Even the Southern Baptist Convention has taken a position. Well, sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Right. Yeah.
But more and more going against it. But there is a movement on the left to divide conservative groups, conservative churches, and they're infiltrating through conservative sounding groups. They're infiltrating, but when you track them back, you follow them back. If you remember Phil Haney, who was he worked for Department of Homeland Security, wrote a book, See Something, Say Nothing. Some of our listeners are familiar with him.
Yeah.
He had been an entomologist before working for Department of Homeland Security and Customs before that. And he said he was asked how he was so effective at tracking down these terrorist organizations. He said it's just like like studying insects. You just track them back to their colony.
That's good.
And it's good advice.
Yeah.
You find some of these groups and see who they reference, see who they look to, and see who's behind them, and then follow that back and see who these people are. And you will be surprised. I don't think any conservative would have anything to do with these groups if they knew who was behind them.
Absolutely. And the terrifying is not the right word, but the concerning thing is that both the House Bill 183 and the Senate Bill 103, the primary sponsors have both Democrat and Republican support.
Mm-hmm.
And the co-sponsors on both of the bills, the House bill has a few more co-sponsors, but there's three or four on the Senate side. There's about seven Republicans signed on in the House bill.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly they're making this a bipartisan, but they're calling this a conservative movement. They're talking about this.
Yes.
And boy, we got a lot of former politicians. We'll probably talk about this in the next half hour, you know, and current politicians that are okay with this. And this is going to be a big uphill battle. It's
because
it's so entrenched and the environment is so ripe for this to move, because it's always it's seen as an act of compassion. Like, why does the taking of one life, why does that justify the taking of another life? Well, because God said that's the plan. God said this is the standard from which you work. And I would contend that the issue is not the effectiveness of the death penalty, but the application of the death penalty. And certainly we violate, we were talking about the Ecclesiastes, the verse in Ecclesiastes, which I think, you know, when I think of the death penalty and really any type of judgment, I think of this, you know, all the time. Because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. So there is absolutely a deterrent factor, certainly not for the one who's getting the death penalty, because that's his punishment. But it is to help preserve society and change the course of action so we don't keep spilling the blood and be that violent society, which, you know, when Noah's flood, what does it say, Noah's flood? For violence had corrupted and filled the earth.
Exactly.
So it was so prevalent that God said, we got to do this.
And you're referencing that verse, is Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verse 11. I remember in the 1990s, it was found that a young black man, say an older teen in their 20s, had a greater life expectancy in prison on death row than they did on the streets of major cities like Cleveland, Atlanta, New York, LA, or whatever. As something is seriously wrong when a person has a greater life expectancy on death row than out in supposedly free. And that's exactly because of what you said. Sentence against an evil work is not being executed speedily. That's why people don't have a deterrence from this, because it's not being implemented correctly. And are there cause for reform for the death penalty? Sure.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think repealing is the answer.
Yeah, I think it's a wrong reaction. But this has been enjoyable, Pastor Alan. I'm glad you were with us. And we're going to continue this conversation into the next half hour on your show. And so we're gonna keep going on. So stay tuned. We'll be back here in just a little bit. So,
we have about 20 seconds I think left too. And I just
saw
wanna,
the three and yeah,
sorry,
it was
I was trying to give you a zero there as well. But we will pick this up and give you something that you can do to make a difference as well.
Yeah, amen. All right, we'll be back here just after a short break.
You have been listening to For the Cause of Christ with Pastor John Lutz from the North Coast Baptist Church in Lakewood. Pastor Lutz and the congregation would like to extend a cordial invitation for you to join them at any of their services. Sunday morning worship is at 11, the Sunday evening service is at 6, and the Wednesday Bible study is at 7 p.m. North Coast Baptist Church is located at 2051 Quail Street in Lakewood. For directions or more information, please call 216-521-3800. That's 216-521-3800. Or send an email to northcoastbaptist@sbcglobal.net. That's North Coast Baptist at sbcglobal.net. Thank you for listening. This program has been sponsored by the North Coast Baptist Church of Lakewood, Ohio.